Welcome to LEIs, Increasing Usability and Benefits of the New Standardized Identifier. This is a DerivSource podcast sponsored by Interactive Data. LEIs, the regulatory mandated alphanumeric code, assigns counterparties developed to assist in entity identification and the monitoring of systemic risk. This is a great enabler for standardization of entity data for financial institutions. The development of the Standardized Legal Entity Identifier, or LEI, is very much underway. But how can firms and market participants utilize this new identifier to improve internal data flow and risk monitoring processes whilst also meeting the regulatory reporting requirements coming underway? In today's podcast, we really aim to answer this question of usability. We have with us two data experts who will discuss how both financial institutions and data vendors will use this new identifier to improve internal data flow, risk monitoring, and again, regulatory reporting. With us, we have Darren Marsh. He is the European Business Manager, Risk Management and Compliance at Interactive Data. He is responsible for identifying and developing services that are designed to meet Interactive Data's clients' needs for regulatory compliance and risk management. We also have with us Chris Johnson. He is Head of Product Management, Market Data Services at HSBC Security Services. Prior to HSBC, Chris was at Threadneedle Investments, where he was the Head of Investment Information Services. And before that, he was a Director at UBS and a Vice President at Chase Manhattan and Bankers Trust. Now, before we jump into this discussion of usability, let's first give our listeners here an update on LEIs and their intended use, first and foremost. And Darren, do you want to start us off and give us this overview?
Certainly, Julia. In scoping out the influence and really the origins of LEI, it's worth taking a look back to the financial crisis 2007-2008. And really look at the kind of the regulatory response in forming the LEI going forward. So certainly what we had was the regulators cited that there was a failure of risk management and controls, which led to the financial crisis, certainly contributed to it going forward. But as a result, the regulators have increased demands for transparency and the understanding of exposure. So really the regulatory focus is very much on the macroeconomic tools that are required in order to monitor systemic risk. And the way you can look at this is that it's a process akin to a long-range weather forecasting. And regulators are looking to analyze firms' positions to identify areas of high concentration in the system and take the necessary action to avoid or even reduce systemic buildup. So, you know, as you can imagine, we're talking about some pretty full-on risk modeling, and these models themselves will require huge amounts of information. But it's of paramount importance that information is accurate on a given firm's exposures. So, really, the barometer of success of the regulator's success in monitoring systemic risk will be very much based on the financial institutions themselves' ability to provide the positions and the supporting reference data in an aggregated, standardized view so that the regulators can consume that data for effective risk modeling. So really what we're talking about here is a change in the nature of risk management. And as a result, firms need to be aware that risk management itself will become very much more forward-looking, more qualitative and quantitative, more frequent. And probably most importantly, it's going to be managed on an enterprise-wide basis. So in order to present this holistic view of an institution's total risk exposure, firms will be required to present a consolidated view of the total exposures by each legal entity that the institution transacts with, and all of the different roles that particular institution or that particular entity performs within an institution from across the entire enterprise. In practice, this effectively involves aggregation of all individual positions across individual trading desks, including global asset classes within the organization, but linking them back. So if you like, creating touch points back to the issuing entity of the individual positions, the trade counterparty, the guarantor that's underwriting or insuring some of those positions, and also the institutional client, and understanding the relationships between all of these entities in order to fully determine the high risk overlap that exists between them. So it's within this, with this background and within this new environment, that unique identification of entities plays an essential role. And this is really where the provision of a global legal entity identifier could become an invaluable component in the data supply chain, because it effectively provides the industry and regulators alike with a common language for identifying the various different touch points within firms, between different firms, and between firms and regulators alike. So really, again, in conclusion, the provision of a global LEI is seen very much as an important building block by the regulators in their twin objectives of strengthening risk management within firms themselves, and also providing regulators with the means with which to monitor systemic risk.
Taking the same question from a slightly different angle, first thing I'd say is that the comments that I make on this podcast are not necessarily the views of HSBC. What Darren's described, I think, is a vision that is shared by many, and personally I think it will become a success during my career and achieve what Darren has outlined. But taking this from a different tack, the legal entity identifier, and we'll discuss the state of readiness and targets later on during this, but as far as the delivery of LEI, this will be led in the first place by regulatory reporting requirements. And the intended use to start with is the transaction reporting from the CFTC, which will be coming in quarter three this year. And we're also expecting to see, and we're looking out for consultations for other regulations which may include LEI as well. So I think from an intended use, it's really the regulatory reporting-led process that will drive the introduction and the starting point for this. From the systemic point of view, I agree exactly with what Darren has been describing, and the industry panel that's been appointed to define the LEI. I think it's been well thought out based on many years of predecessor concepts, and the logic behind the LEI should achieve and be able to achieve what is required. The one thing I did want to say about the intended use is there's a bit of confusion about the LEI in that it is an entity identifier, and for those who don't work in data management, the key thing is it's not an instrument identifier or a classification. And so this is an additional piece of market data that firms don't have today.
Okay, great. That's a good overview to give us the kind of lay of the land for LEIs. But what about kind of an update on the status as to where it stands in terms of publication? Chris, do you want to give us a very brief update on that?
Yes, we have a draft ISO standard 17442, and right now we have a recommended firms to run this. The DTC is recommended as running the LEI database. I've read that there's a potential rival called GS1. SWIFT is recommended as the Facilities Management Registration Authority. ANA and the national NNAs are recommended to roll this out more widely. So this is intended globally, and the take-up levels are being confirmed. These recommendations that have been put together over the next few months, by April we anticipate, and then there's a G20 summit where this is expected to be reviewed in June, and the decision made to proceed, we're hoping. And so the CFTC have included the LEI within the OTC derivatives reporting, as I've already mentioned. This is defined, the standard, and it's awaiting final approval. But I think the amount of perspiration, to quote Francis Gross, there's been a lot of inspiration on the LEI, but the perspiration is now going to happen over the next 6 months to make this a reality.
And speaking of perspiration, let's go into the implementation of LEIs and get into some of the nitty-gritty of that. Firstly, I want to know what the rollout plan for this identifier would be, and how would firms be allocated an identifier to begin with. Darren, do you want to start us off with this question?
Yes, certainly. Chris gave a very good summary of where we are at the moment, current timelines for release. So we have a draft standard in ISO 17442. Now that standard was passed unanimously by the technical committee back in December of last year. My understanding is that there are a few outstanding questions from some of the participants, which will be addressed by April of this year. So it's currently looking very, very likely that the standard will be finalised in April. And obviously, again, as Chris said, the CFTC rules around OTC derivatives are also playing very much a very active role in this. Their initial requirement is for information on entities around swap deals. And the rulemaking is actually, finalised rules are looking towards or shooting for a July 2012 implementation for an initial load of those entities around swaps, and certainly expanded out around OTC derivatives as a whole. So at the moment, there is a first phase release on the cards. DTCC have said that they will provide the initial 12,000 entities in July and actually expand that coverage to the 50,000 entities of interest to the OTC derivatives market in order to cover the CFTC requirements.
Sorry, Darren.
No, sorry, that's fine. I was just going to go on and talk about it. The code itself will be available from a public utility, which will be hosted by DTCC, and there's certainly a role in this for the national numbering agencies as well. And these guys will actually act as agents for the utility within their local jurisdictions. And sorry, just to finalise on this, the utility is going to operate very much on a cost recovery basis. And my understanding, again, is that there will be a small charge per initial request for an LEI, but obviously at that point forward, then it will be license-free and it will be freely available to the industry as a whole to use.
Yeah, I think what I'm expecting is that the initial tranche expected in quarter three this year will lead to an intelligent rollout over a period of time led by new regulations. But building up and getting the LEI up to a critical mass where it's used widely, and starting with the requirement for OTC derivatives reporting. I understand that the allocation process is like a self-registration process is anticipated using a web portal for firms to apply with the validation process and with the validation tags. To show that the extent to which it's been reviewed. I'd even, in a very good way, use as an analogy Wikipedia in that the information will be entered by one party and reviewed by others and be very transparent as to what status it's reached. And on Darren's point about the costs, I think one of the great features of the LEI, which is so welcome, is the fact that it is license-free. And the licensing of other types of data from the market at the moment is very much a thorn in the side of the industry from a banking administration perspective. And I understand that the LEI is anticipated to be cost-free from a license point of view, and that if there were any charges for use and for fees, they would be like peppercorn levels. So this is a great precedent for the way the market data needs to go. And given that any costs of this will be passed on ultimately to investors, so the fact this is not going to be charged to investors is very good news.
Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of people will be interested to learn more about that as it progresses. But moving on beyond allocation, let's look at how firms will be able to implement this identifier to ensure that it's used to improve internal linking between data sources. And Chris, do you want to give us your input on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the LEI, as Darren described, this really is a code that's designed to straddle all existing types of entity identifier. You could argue there are plenty of these in existence, the likes of the BIC, which is used in settlements, and the IBAN cash. EIN for US tax, DUNS, alerts, SWIFT. There are plenty of identity codes, but these are serving specific purposes. What the LAI will do was link those up and it'll provide a common thread across those. So really the key to this in terms of implementation is to provide the mapping of the LEI, which itself doesn't tell you a great deal. It'll be a singular code, but it needs the associated fields, which will then make it into a useful information that can then be cross-referenced into other entities and provide that thread that's needed to bring the entity world to be more consistent and to provide the MI that Darren was describing earlier. And the there are maybe some entities that are not eligible for an LEI, retail investors, and we think perhaps sub-funds that will come out as we go through. So the LEI will cover all the transactions that and subsidiaries that are party to financial transactions and will go a long way to covering entities, but there will be areas where there are other internal and other external codes that are needed as well.
Yeah, and I'd certainly echo Chris's comments on that. Certainly the intention of the LEI is that, for the most part, it will straddle, for want of a better phrase, all of the existing identifiers that are out there and help firms, with the enormous process of aggregating information. But it's kind of interesting, from the data vendor side, the way that we deal when we deal with a lot of this aggregation on an ongoing basis. I mean, it's one of our main tenets of our business. So, the way that we could look at this as well is to say that an LEI, as a code, it doesn't provide that much benefit on its own. But where it does become very useful is when it's packaged with that additional content. Where it's used as a tool to aggregate different identifiers, but also when it's attached to the underlying reference data, for example, that the industry relies on a day-to-day basis to support their business requirements. So, there are lots of tangible benefits to having this. It's not the code itself, but the data that's linked to it, and the fact that this code can be freely passed between firms and regulators, attached to all of the essential underlying information that firms require. So certainly, as a data vendor, I fully expect the data vendor community to become the main distribution point for LEI within, linking it into existing data services. And certainly, it's through this process that the LEI will be able to proliferate firms' databases and provide a standard, if you like, for data comparison, both across the internal databases and also when evaluating and implementing vendor feeds as well. Again, I endorse Chris's views totally in that, it will, I believe in time, given time, it will provide a real fillip to the, to the reference data, operational side. So really, if we look at the potential benefits of this, there are a few that spring to my mind straight away. And certainly, as we've described with the aggregation of data here, there's a potential to reduce the amount of reconciliation across internal databases, and provide more interoperability across systems that run off of different ID schemas. From a clearing and settlement perspective as well, more accurate identification of counterparties could negate the amount of failed trades due to incomplete or inaccurate counterparty data. And also from processing entity level corporate actions information, mergers and acquisition activities specifically, it could eventually negate the need for end users to have to cross-reference from different vendors across different proprietary identification codes, or even in some cases having to map the information from a single instrument ID and then try and work it back up to the issuer level and then proliferate back down against all the instrument IDs that represent positions within an organization. So you know, certainly there are a number of real tangible benefits that I can see coming out of LEI use.
Great, thank you, Darren. Yeah. Now, I just wanted to go into data flow, because my question is really how will the incorporation of LEIs into data flow improve the operational and risk management processes specifically within institutions? And Darren, is this something that you have insight into?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, again, I think this comes very much down to the aggregation of information. So again, you know, LEI could significantly reduce the amount of time to aggregate entity data across different systems in order to provide that enterprise-wide view of risk exposure. So, you know, really it both strengthens the internal risk management process by really being able to to roll up to a single name issuer, for example, or group of issuers that represent the securities held in an investment portfolio or a fund. So, you know, if we're talking about sort of single name exposure, that's really an essential component of the risk management process and complements forward-looking risk metrics by providing a consistent view on an on-demand basis. So really what we're saying is that by providing these linkages at the beginning of the process, it's a lot more transparent to risk management, to risk managers, as to if a certain position's taken, will this increase exposure? Will this break client mandate or investment or internal investment policy? So, the idea being that this is really a kind of an enabler that allows organizations to have more information, more accurate information available at the point at which they take an interest in trade. And then obviously the benefits of that is that information can proliferate from front through back office as well. So it provides a consistent approach through each one of the individual steps that go in from indication of trade through point of trade through clearing and settlement. So really, it provides a consistent view of this information, and also the other real tangible benefit of that as well is that you have a consistent view of risk exposures going forward. So if we do see a single name event, should we say a crisis event, something like Lehman Brothers, it's much easier in theory to understand all the subsidiary organizations of that group and then be able to really calculate what the total exposure is to that organization. Certainly it's an oft used example, I know, but Lehman's is probably the best example of this, in that we experienced that some firms took 3 or 4 weeks to understand or unravel what their total exposure was to the organization, and obviously 3 or 4 weeks after the event it causes problems for that firm itself.
Well, the expense of any alarmist concerns is whilst there may have been some firms that weren't able to get the information for that length of time, there are plenty of other firms that have very well run infrastructures and those linkages that Darren describes. I think the point about the LEI is that it provides a common thread across organisations which the regulators need, but well-run firms have this information already. I mean, where large firms have merged and they're linking up different data sets, then obviously the LEI will help. But I think what I would just be a bit concerned is that any expectations of benefits in the short term of the LEI through efficiency and through this type of reporting. I mean, firms that are well run should be able to do this already, and the LEI will help them to do that in a way that crosses their whole enterprise, and will certainly mean that the regulators will be able to look at an industry-wide and global perspective of it. But I think I know Darren wasn't saying this, but clearly firms have processes that are based on entity data that's already in place, and those types of exposures should be being managed as a course in BAU today.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Now I want to go a little bit into the practical challenges of the LEI implementation, exploring both implications for vendors such as Interactive Data and banks. Now, Chris, do you want to give us your perspective first on what you view to be the practical changes of an LEI implementation?
Yes, and we've talked all about the positives and the purpose and the vision, and really the reality is that there's a great deal of practical, and I mentioned earlier about the perspiration, and this is the perspiration section of the podcast. So the field is expected to be 20 characters long, which include a two-digit check digit, and it's deliberately designed so that it will never have to be altered, which in the long run makes this much easier to maintain. But nevertheless, it is that the field length could pose challenges for some systems. And so system capability to handle a 20-character long field and also to handle the associated fields as well is important. Those are things like the official name of the entity, the headquarters address, the country of incorporation, and the ultimate parents, of which there could be up to four. These all would need to be included in the systems in order to make the code useful and come to life. I think the main point I'd make, having had many years of suffering at the hands of systems that have been designed with external codes as a mandatory key, please, anyone designing LEI, don't make the LEI into a mandatory key that is dependent on being populated. This will just lead to dummy codes and a lot of noise impeding STP. Really, the LEI fits in or will fit in as an alternate identifier that gets populated as soon as it can be made available, but not to slow down the business. And the other point I was going to make was the mapping is right through the internal codes that any organization may have across its databases and also to other existing entity codes like the BIC and the EIN, DUNS, ALERT, SWIFT, and so forth. They would need to be mapped in to achieve the vision that Darren outlined. And clearly that would require ongoing maintenance as well to keep those codes synchronized.
Darren, do you want to discuss the practical challenges that you see as a vendor for LEI implementation?
Yes, certainly. I mean, vendors are very similar to clients in some of the ways that Chris described, and certainly they'll face some fundamental questions in implementing an LEI into core databases. The most obvious one is, can your internal systems and outbound services accommodate an additional 20-character code, plus the ancillary reference data that supports LEI as well? Certainly things like full legal names, certainly having worked in the vendor industry for quite some time, you see different formats supported by different vendors. And again, in some ways, underlying systems have limitations. So for example, can you hold full legal names? Can you process and distribute full legal names in excess of 100 characters would be an obvious one for me. Certainly the mapping process itself, how is entity data currently managed within the vendor shop? And this could be a very, very interesting one, actually, because, in the same way that you see information around legal entities maintained within organizations, the structures can be slightly different. Do vendors in some cases actually hold information at that legal entity level? I think in some cases, no. You do see it at an individual instrument program level, for example. That would be one example. But there are differences, and these need to be taken into account with adoption. And also, how to manage any differences or duplication if it can't be mapped on a one-to-one basis. And also from a maintenance perspective, how will changes impact that model going forward? Any changes to the standards or any corporate events that have an effect, that create deltas, will there be, and undoubtedly there will be, instances whereby data is out of sync because corporate actions are reported at a different time or adopted made effective on an LEI by the utility. So it's a lot of these questions that need to be to looked into. Another question as well I would suggest to for practitioners to ask vendors is, when we're talking about vendors being one of the main distribution platforms for LEIs, I think the question is, can that vendor actually interface to a client's view of entity data? You know, is there a capability to cross-reference to an internal ID, for example? These are kind of the practical questions that would enable a smoother implementation.
I think interesting the point about the synchronization. Picking up on one of the themes of this discussion is the way in which the new regulations are turning what firms have been managing at a micro level into a macro level issue. And one of the areas we're hoping that the LEI will make a difference is an area of data content inconsistency at the moment is issuers. What we find is between the vendors, the issuer data being the issuer field and the ultimate parent field, there are quite significant differences between them. So what we're hoping is that the advent of LEIs and all the cross-referencing and these associated ancillary fields will help to create a synchronized standard vendor-wide view of this data, because where we have firms that use different vendors, we really need them to be producing consistent information. So hopefully this will join up the data vendors to produce consistent information for consumers.
Now, speaking of data vendors, obviously data vendors play a very integral part to LEIs going forward. So Darren, I'm hoping you can give us a little bit of information as to how data vendors are packaging data services going forward to support the use of LEIs.
Yeah, certainly. I think the most obvious one in the short to medium term, I think we're going to see a proliferation of services around cross-referencing. So certainly, cross-referencing probably proprietary IDs usually to LEI as firms will potentially look to centralize within their own operations and maybe even move away from legacy databases maintaining different standards. So very much embedded as part of data vendor services. I can see a point in time, and again, as Chris mentioned before, this all depends very much on the regulatory rollout and reaching kind of critical mass, if you like, for LEI. Those cross-referencing services, are, I think, in the longer term, will go away because the data supply chain could effectively have LEI embedded within it. So therefore, it wouldn't necessarily be required as a standalone capability anymore. As this kind of flow of LEIs increases, you could see those kinds of services kind of taking a back seat, if you like, and then this information just being provided in the usual vendor services. But it's also important to know as well and to understand that the LEI itself won't provide all of the underlying instrument to issuer linkages that are required or the wider hierarchy information that's required for deeper credit risk analysis, for example, and again I think vendors are going to continue to add value in that way by creating and producing services around specific business requirements. I'll give you an example of this. We already deliver entity-based data services to clients with issue-to-issuer linkages in our business entity service. And the difficulty kind of arises for clients when taking an identification schema from us and then trying to map that information from a different provider of that information. So really, again, this is where the LEI will kind of come into its own. But certainly, again, going forward, I think there'll be a number of additional opportunities to package content. And you could actually envisage a point whereby you could start to package information around the LEI itself. So for example, if you have if you want to take information sets around for credit risk or counterparty risk monitoring, you could see all of the capital structure embedded in a service with an LEI. So the client can take that pre-paced content and drop it into a counterparty dashboard and then monitor risk on an ongoing basis. So I think that's where it's really exciting for the vendor community is that they're already thinking about LEI in that context and providing real value-added services going forward to the industry as a whole.
And as far as where the next steps for LEIs. I think the first thing is to include the LEI within system development plans and upgrades. If this had to be done in a rapid hurry across all the financial services firms, this would be a very, very big price tag. To build this into system upgrades and developments over coming months and years is going to be something which is much more likely to be successful and to integrate the LEI and its associated fields in the appropriate places. So I think system development plans, strategic plans, inclusion of LEI is the next stage, and hopefully that will happen in the next months once this becomes a reality. And another point about what's happened next is the education. Over the last few weeks, I've been asking and playing devil's advocate, trying to understand more about the LEI, and what I've discovered is there's really very little knowledge outside of the world of data management. And even I learned all sorts of things, having heard and been to all the conferences, even then. The consuming areas really need to understand what this means to them and in practical terms, what difference the LEI will make and how this applies. We've talked a bit about the uniqueness, or rather singularity, and I think we probably need some analogies as to how much difference the LEI could make. And the one I'd use is, if I may, is the issues there were with credit default swaps 10 years ago. And for the reference obligation, singular identification, there was a proprietary code, which is not license-free, which was introduced called the Red Code. And so that really means there's certainty with the credit default swap market, thanks to that unique and singular code. So what the LEI should do is, once it becomes widespread, is to provide that degree of certainty across all entities, across financial services. So that's a big piece that's not happened before. I think over the years, there have been many clever data professionals who've dedicated many years of their lives to try and come up with the legal identity, the former runner being the IBEI, and I've sat through many discussions about this over the years. And really, what's good to see about the LEI is the intelligence from that thought process is coming through in the design of the LEI. And it's timely, given that with the new regulations, I mentioned earlier about the issuer consistency, data content, that's very relevant for Solvency II, for anybody that has a Solvency II program, I think. There's also an element of entities with the FATCA regulation, which I believe is largely going to be geared around in the immediate term around the EIN, but I would expect that strategically that the LEI should form part of that.
I mean, just
Darren, do you have any recommendations from a data vendor perspective on how firms should start preparing for LEIs now?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, just to follow on, if I could just quickly follow on from Chris, because you made a very, very important point there, and it's almost, you know, with one eye looking towards the future and understanding, you know, what's potentially coming down the pipe. I think one of the most advantageous thing about the mandating or potential mandating of LEI going forward is I think it's going to force the industry to look at the individual use cases around financial transactions as a whole. Lots of individual use cases to understand the use of this code, and really it's almost, you know, a soup to nuts, if you like, not reworking but review of those processes, and I can't help but think, you know, that's going to be very, very beneficial going forward in understanding, you know, how we do business and also in shaping this standard and potential other standards going forward, because it's from those use cases that the industry will benefit or derive the greatest benefits. So sorry, just to go back to your question about the vendor side. So you know, certainly on recommendations. I mean, what can firms do to start preparing now? Well, a lot of it really depends, I think, on the firm itself. You know, whether they have a centralized model or whether they're supporting a decentralized model. Certainly, from a centralized perspective, and we've touched on this before. You know. Is the main challenge going to be to map the LEI to your internal entity ID? You know, are you going to want to source? Do you want to self-source that? Do you want to take that information directly from DTCC and map it internally? That may be a better process than working with your vendor, but certainly have those conversations. In a particular instance, you may want to do that, but you know, at the same time, have conversations with the vendors and see if it's a much more efficient or preferable route for them to provide the cross-referencing capability for you. From a decentralized model, it gets a little bit more complicated because you know you're then looking at the potential of taking the LEI from a number of different sources and understanding in each one of those instances whether that LEI can be mapped into each of those proprietary formats, and then how that will work on your internal databases as well. I mean, it could well instigate discussions around whether an organization that isn't necessarily decentralized would consider going to a centralized model as a result and trying to build some of the efficiencies out from there as well. And again, you know, we talked slightly before about the global regulations and how these affect your organization. I mean, I can't really emphasize this enough, but Chris made a great point about, you know, regulation going forward. I mean, we've already seen with the CFTC requirements that, you know, when they were putting together their new rules, they were talking about a universal identifier for entities, you know, and this has now obviously been superseded by LEI. So yeah, the finalized rules now include LEI, whereas before that we were talking about a universal ID. So certainly, you know, think about it in context with other regulations that are coming down the pipe to ensure if LEI becomes a requirement for those regulations, that you can manage that internally. And then the final point I would say, really, again, just to enforce that, is to stay involved with the industry consultation process. Really, you know, either individually or through the relevant trade bodies, because again, you know, this will help the industry as a whole define and shape the standards going forward.
Okay, great. Well, that concludes today's LEI podcast. Thank you to our speakers, Chris Johnson of HSBC Security Services and Darren Marsh of Interactive Data. Links to the speakers' biographies will be available via the webpage, as will more information on LEIs and about our sponsor, Interactive Data. Now, just a quick note, please do not quote the speakers without first getting their permission, but all the listeners of this podcast and members of DerivSource.com are welcome to submit any questions or comments they may have on this podcast and the topic via the comments section at the very bottom of the webpage. Your thoughts are important to us, and we look forward to seeing your responses to this particular discussion, and we hope you join us again in the near future. Thanks very much.